Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
I've now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCRW 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery, and of course, I'm Al Warren. Joining me as my co-host today is Mr. Mike Brown. How are you doing, Mike?
I'm doing not so bad, Alan. It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a while, but you know, big shot running around with this big new book. And
oh, and there's another one coming.
Yeah, so you're going to be doing a second one, eh? For same style, same sort of thing as what you did for the first time?
I'm doing a bunch of different stories, more on some weird and wacky things. I'm going to cover some strange phenomena and interesting human beings and throughout history, all that kind of thing. So I'm going away a little from crime.
Yeah. Politics?
Yeah. No, thank you.
Well, you said weird phenomenon and all that sort of interesting people.
Not that weird. Fits.
Yeah, not that weird. Not psycho weird. Anyway, yeah. Well, that's good. Well, today we've got another bestseller here. We've got someone that's been doing it a lot longer than you. So,
yeah.
Kathy Wright, wow. Thank you for being here.
Oh, well, thank you for inviting me.
Wow. So you've been doing this for quite a while. I mean, I see since the 90s, you've been really doing this. You must have seen a lot of changes in the world of publishing over these last 20 plus years. What do you think of the way that publishing's going?
Oh, wow. You're asking the wrong person. I have seen I've seen changes. You know, there was the pandemic, of course, when nobody toured, but that wasn't the fault of the publishing industry. But I think they've tightened their belts a lot. I'm going on tour for this book. This is number 21 in the Temperance Brennan series. And I haven't toured, I don't know, for two or three books, I guess. It's a little more austere, I would say.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Do you find that has affected sales in any way? Or because I know, I mean, my book came out right in the middle of the pandemic, so I have never been able to tour a book. So what do you see as far as a difference?
Again, I'm the wrong person to ask. I don't pay attention very much to sales, and I certainly don't. They send me these massive statistical analyses, but I kind of glance at it. And, you know, the pandemic, people were stuck at home, so maybe they were buying more books and reading more books. On the other hand, you know, they couldn't get out, so maybe they're buying fewer books. I'm not a social scientist. I have Abby Brennan's skepticism of
Skeptic. Well, you know, when you're writing a series like this, where you've got, like you said, 21 books, where you're using the same primary characters, how do you keep it fresh and how do you keep it going for so long?
That's the real challenge. And right from the beginning, one of the things that's a real challenge is, just as an example, is how do you introduce your core cast of characters? You have to do that, but you're doing it for people, return readers who might have read 20 books and they know who Temperance Brennan is. They know who Andrew Ryan is, Skinny Slidell, but that same book may be the very first book that a reader is picking up. So you've got to introduce them. But how do you do that time after time after time? And, you know, you can't just use narrative. That would be so boring. I have had her being cross-examined on the witness stand. I have had her sitting in faculty meetings where she's bored, so she starts writing her autobiography. I mean, I'm always trying to come up with new ways to get the central characters and central premise out without being repetitive to return readers.
Yeah, that's got to be difficult. Would you actually sit down and pre-plan your books? Like, is this all sort of mapped out ahead of time and outlined, and then you're kind of filling the details, or is this just by playing it by ear?
Each book or the whole series?
Well, the whole series and each book, it kind of goes together, because did you know when you were writing the first one or maybe book two that this was going to be a 21 book series?
Well, it crosses your mind, and then you say to yourself, get real, you're a debut author. You've never written fiction. No one's ever heard of you. If you're lucky, maybe you'll actually sell it to a publishing house, you know. So, mm-hmm. I didn't envision it. I hoped it would be purchased and that people would buy it and read it and that it would become a series, but I did not envision a 21 book series with a 12 season television show attached to it.
Yeah, it's just crazy how things go, you know, like that. Now, yeah, you're really addicted to the bones here. So you had a history with forensics, didn't you?
I do. I have a history. I'm a forensic anthropologist myself, and I practiced that profession for more years than I'm going to admit to. So I had a storehouse of, I switched from being just an academic teaching university, teaching physical anthropology, to being both a caseworker, you know, a forensic scientist in big government labs primarily. And somewhere along the way, I made full professor at the university. So I thought, you know, I can do whatever I want. I have a kind of unique niche that I'm in. So I thought I would try writing fiction. And I just, no training in creative writing at all. I just thought I'm going to write the kind of book I like to read. So that's how I made the switch from academia and forensics to writing commercial fiction.
Weren't you a bit nervous by that? Because you said you had no formal training in that. Weren't you kind of worried about writing something and everyone can see it?
Well, I figured if it was bad, I would submit it to, in my naivete, I said 50. If I get 50 reject slips, you know, then I'll take that as a clue and go back to my day job. But, you know, I figured if it was really bad, nobody would see it because nobody would publish it.
Yeah, I guess that's true enough.
I mean, but as I was writing, I had no idea if it was any good or not.
How do you feel now that you're in book 21? How do you feel like it's come along? Do you think that you've noticed a big difference?
Well, hopefully I've evolved. Cold, Cold Bones, the new book, is kind of a retrospective. It's the storyline is that Tempe is sent out on a number of body recoveries and an eyeball shows up on her back porch. And anyway, she eventually realizes that someone is copying her earlier cases. Someone is mimicking these early deaths and early murders. So what I've done is I've drawn from earlier books in my series to create this storyline. So I thought that would be a lot of fun for my return readers, but also give kind of a peek into what it is I do to first-time readers. Did that answer your question, or did I just go way off?
Well, we were talking politics earlier, so that was a political answer. No, it's all good. So is your main character you?
Well, yeah, a lot of it, certainly professionally, she does exactly what I did. She commutes from the North Carolina to Quebec. She does all of the forensic work on both forensic anthropology work on both ends. But I'm told we have the same sense of humor. And I try to put humor in the books, just as we did in the show, which is hard because every episode and every book deals with violent death. So how do you do that and still be sensitive if that's a real balancing act? But she's also her own person. She's younger in the TV show. She's She's got quirks. I wanted the character not to be perfect, so obviously I couldn't draw on myself for that. So, you know, she's a recovering alcoholic in the books, not so much on the TV show. So, yes, she's partly me, but she's also her own person.
So how do you see your character? Like, do you, because I asked this, because a lot of the fiction writers that we have will say that they hear the voice or they see them visually in their mind and things like that. What's your experience with your main character there?
I hear her more than I see her. And now it's hard not to see her as Emily Deschanel. But I do hear her voice, and I don't believe in that. Oh, the character took over and went off in this direction. And I, you know, you're at the keyboard, you have the delete key, you're in control. But I do see things she would say, and I can anticipate things that, you know, jokes she might make and things she might do. But I'm the writer. I'm in charge. I create her.
Yeah, yeah. You're not waking up in the middle of the night with a shovel in your hand or anything.
You know, Tempe takes a lot more risks than I do. I do not go out digging up bodies, and much less so in later books. I mean, she did that in Deja Dead, which was the first book. But, you know, if she just stayed in the lab all day and looked at bones, that would not be very interesting, I don't think. So she does get involved, both in the TV show and in the books, get involved a lot more in the actual detective end of it, the investigative end of it, than I do in real life. I've gone to crime scenes, of course. I've gone to death scenes with cops, with detectives, but I don't go interviewing witnesses and that sort of thing.
Do you think it's come a long way, this whole the forensics with bodies and stuff? Has it grown so far that maybe if you went back into the lab, you wouldn't understand a lot of it?
The science, the actual science?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I keep up with my field, even though I'm not actively doing casework. That's just been a very recent development. And I still attend the American Academy of Forensic Sciences meetings, unless we're having a pandemic. I still read the journals. I still, every week, I'm online with five other forensic anthropology women, and we discuss developments in the field and different cases that they're involved in. So I'm very much still in contact with the field. So I don't think I'd be surprised if I'm sure in the future, go into a forensic anthropology lab.
So how many of your books have been informed by actual cases that you've been involved in professionally?
I don't know the count. The first one was based on a serial murder case that I worked on, for sure. The second one was based, I mean, many of them, I'm not going to go book by book, don't panic, but they either come from that or something I've seen at one of the professional meetings or read about in the journal, or they're what we used to call in the writer's room, ripped from the headlines, and something I've seen, maybe, or Twitter, or the Bone Code, the one right before the current one, Cold Cold Bones. I saw this article about a Chinese doctor who, contrary to everything everyone in the scientific community has agreed, now that we have the technology, we have the whole human genome mapped, and we have the technology to modify it. But everybody's agreed we're not going to create designer babies. Well, this Chinese scientist went ahead and did that. He changed the genomes of two unborn babies. So I read that little article and I thought, well, there's a great premise. What if someone uses this knowledge and technology for nefarious purposes? So it can start. My ideas come from, some are directly from cases, although I change the names, the dates, the places, everything. Mm-hmm. For both ethical and legal reasons. And some, you know, might, as I said, just be something I read or heard somewhere.
You must have to be really careful. Like when you say you put humor in it, it takes a certain timing, doesn't it?
Yes, yes. And you have to be sensitive to that. It has to be in the proper setting and scene. And a lot of the humor is, you know, directed at herself. She has a good sense of humor about herself, or it derives from dialogue between her. One of my favorite characters is Skinny Slidell. And Skinny is this grumpy, grotchety old cop in Charlotte, North Carolina. And in the new book, Cold, Cold Bones, she's working with Skinny. So I really had Erskine, his name is Erskine Slidell, but he goes by Skinny, even though he's far from it. So I had a lot of fun writing the dialogue between Tempe and Skinny. So you can do it in that context, I think, without being offensive. But, you know, if you, it's almost like real life. There's a lot of black humor in the autopsy room. It's a tension reliever, except in certain situations. For example, if it's a child autopsy, it's absolutely dead silent. So there's some situations in which you can use humor and some you just don't. I feel
you must really you work at keeping the science correct then. Hey, like there's not any wild things going on in any of the books.
No, in the books, I'm really fastidious about that. And I'm lucky because working in a full spectrum crime and medical legal lab, everybody's there. I can walk down the hall and talk to, you know, the DNA guys, or I can walk over and pose questions to the hair and fiber people or the fire and bombs and arson guys. So I have people I can go to or pick up the phone and call. So that's been a real help. Now, in the writer's room, we used to use the word plausible. It has to be plausible. And I read every script that we filmed, and I would give notes, and mainly I would comment if there was something that, you know what, you just can't do this. No, we're not doing this. But, yeah. But we took a few more liberties with television than I do in the books.
Right, right. Well, you could always go online and do your research.
You can do that. Not through Google or Wikipedia, but yeah, you can do that. You can Google article titles, like if you're interested in how long does it take a body to decompose under, you know, in salt water or something. There's probably a scientific article out there that you can read.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, you'll be flagged by the FBI maybe, but...
You know, I just did one of these questionnaires that the British journalists love to send you, where they're all these. And one of the questions on this list was, if I were to inspect the history of your internet searches, what would I find?
No.
I said, you know, I often wonder that if anyone confiscated my hard drive, I might have some splaining to do.
Yeah, they'll be putting you away.
Yeah.
Well, do you ever put a subtext, or is there a point underneath the entertainment of the books?
Yeah, the bottom line for me, the goal is to write a good story, so that the reader will have a good time reading the story and trying to solve the puzzle and planting the clues, some of which are correct and some of which are red herrings, which is fair as long as you tie them off and they make sense. So that's the main goal. But I also like to touch on topics such as, I've done books on trafficking in humans, human trafficking. I did one. I did one on trafficking in endangered species. I did one on, you know, pedophilia. So I do try to have a bit of a message in there as well.
Yeah, yeah. I guess that would be a key just to making it real. So with this book, how long did this take you to write? Now being book 21.
Well, by contract, I do a book a year, so it took me a year.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So are you pretty regimented? Like you could just sit down and do 9 to 5 Monday to Friday and just. Right.
Yes, I do not do 9 to 5. I'm too old for that. My old vertebra can't take that anymore. But yes, because I think, you know, if you have, and this is one piece of advice, you know, the question you always get, what piece of advice would you get to beginning writers is to write, find that block of time, whatever it is. If it's 2 hours in the morning, what I did with Deja Dead, I had to get up at 6 o'clock and write for 2 hours before going onto campus to teach. Or on weekends or summer vacations or whatever, find that block of time and write. And I'm very disciplined about doing that, I think, because when I wrote the first book, I really had to squeeze it in. If I had 2 hours of free time, I had to sit down and produce. Now, the next day, as I said, you've got the delete key. If what I produced was pure crap, you can go back and modify it or delete it or whatever. But if you get into the pattern of saying, oh, I'm not in the mood today, or the muses are not with me, or I have writer's block. Nope. I don't think that's acceptable.
Wow. So what do you do if you're stuck?
I write through it. I write. I know what scene, where I've come to in the chapter, and I know what the scene is going to be, and I write it, or part of it. I don't write a whole chapter in a day. I think if I get two good pages in a day, I'm happy.
Right, right. Wow. But so when things are going on around you, like for instance, in the last couple of years, all the crazy stuff and the pandemic and anti-maskers, all this wild stuff going on. Right. With that stress level outside of your door, does that sort of affect you in your writing?
Once I get into the groove, once I'm writing, I'm just not aware of anything going on out there. And I have to admit that the pandemic for me was not all that painful because I was COVIDed in with two of my daughters and four of my grandkids at my beach house. So we were there for 4 months. We had our food delivered by DoorDash and we took long walks on the beach. And then I got a lot of writing done. I just blocked out the world, as it were.
Wow. Oh, wow. Do you think that it seeps in somehow, but gets a little darker?
Oh, it does seep in. I mean, you can't completely block it out. You know, we just had 2 mass shootings in 2 weeks. You know, how do you block that out? Yeah. And we still have assault weapons on the street. But anyway, that's another topic. But
yeah, boy, I'll be getting hate mail for that.
Sorry.
No, it's good. It's good. So how do you know when this series is going to end? Or do you?
Don't yet. I'm writing The Bone Hacker for next summer. Is the last book on my current contract. What's funny? The title's in a funny title.
Yeah.
Well, it has a double meaning. It has a double meaning because...
Yeah, computers and...
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, and also the killer's chopping off people's hands. So it has like a double level.
Oh, wow.
So I'll have to decide at the end of The Bone Hacker, well, sometime soon, as I'm finishing it, whether I'm going to do another contract.
So wow. We'll see. Yeah. What do you think that makes the decision? It sounds like you can just kind of, you could probably do 30 of these.
I could. I'd like to. Yeah. I suppose that's a lot for one series, though.
Yeah.
People have done it, like Jack Reacher. How many books of those are there?
Well, yeah, too many.
And Sue Grafton did 26, right? And there are series that have gone a long time.
Yeah. It's just, I think it's hard to keep it fresh. And then how much can you put your characters through, right? Because your character's going to be developing throughout each book. So what are they going to do next?
Right. And part of the definition of a thriller is that your character or someone close to him or her is in danger. And how many different ways can you find to do that? I've had her thrown off a cliff. I've had her, you know, buried alive. I've had her, you know, in a fire. I've had her.
Yeah. Well, she's got to get sick in a pandemic next.
I think she was sick when she was in Guatemala in Grave Secrets. Not a pandemic, but, you know, that's an interesting question for writers is what do you do with the pandemic? Do you acknowledge it? Do you work it into your story? Or do you just completely ignore that it ever took place? I chose in this book to just kind of give lip service to it and someone's wearing a mask and that's the last you hear about it. But others will choose to treat it differently.
Yeah, I think it's a tough one because, one, you don't know where it's going or what's going to happen down the road. And there's a lot of questions still. And then there's a group of people that love it, like that will get picking up all the different movies and books that come out about viruses. And then you get the ones that hate it. So,
Well, and interestingly, The Bone Code, which was the book before this one, it involves a pandemic of sorts. And I wrote that before COVID reared its ugly head.
Oh, so it's your fault.
It's my fault. It's like, what was the one? Fatal Voyage is my book where she's dealing with a mass disaster, a commercial airline disaster. And a month after that came out, I was deployed to New York for 9/11. So that was like prescient as well, I guess.
Wow. You're causing a lot of problems.
I know. That's why maybe I should just take a break. What do you think?
Yeah. Write a comedy.
That might be fun. Yeah.
Do you think you ever go somewhere else, like write a different type of book?
Maybe. Or a screenplay. Yeah. My son and I did, he's a lawyer. He practiced for a total of 2 whole years, hated it, and proposed, why don't we write a young adult series? So we did that. We did 6 books. It's called the Virals series, and it's Temperance Brennan's 14-year-old great niece and her friends solving mysteries at kind of a middle school, high school level.
Well, that's fun.
Yeah, it was really different. I mean, the structure of the young adult books is the same as my adult books. It's equally as complicated. I think they're even longer than the adult books. But what differs is their social concerns, obviously. They're 15, 14 years old. And the language, the dialogue has to be much softer than a 50-year-old crotchety homicide detective.
Come on.
Yeah.
Go for it. Yeah. Do you hope people learn something from the books as well?
Well, I do. I mean, there's the classic every murder mystery, whether it's a forensically driven solution or it's, you know, Agatha Christie or Sherlock Holmes with their intuition. You know, the moral is that the bad guy or girl gets caught and good wins out over evil and all is righted in the universe at the end. It's also true with the episodes, every episode of our show. At the end, it was always resolved. The bad person, the villain, was always caught. You know, and real life's not like that. But maybe that's the appeal of murder mysteries. It always gets resolved.
Yeah. Yeah. So doing a TV show as compared to a book, do you like writing that way or do you like it seeing it written that way?
It's really different. Writing a screenplay, for one thing, it's collective. When you start out your episode, and we had, I forget how many, 7 permanent staff writers, as they're called, and then every season, 3, I think, episodes were for freelancers. So I would do one. But you start out in the writer's room, and collectively, you brainstorm ideas. There would be this big, terrifyingly empty whiteboard on the wall for our show divided into 6 acts. And by the end of a week or two, you have hammered out together, collectively, the outline of your main story, your A story and your B story. And then if you've got a C story going, then you, as the writer, have to pitch that to the showrunner. And I'm not used to doing that when I write my books, much to my editor's annoyance. I write the whole book and send it in. And, you know, and then after you've pitched it, and they give you notes and then you make changes, you're sent to outline. And then you do a very detailed outline, which I don't do writing the books. And then you pitch that. And once that's approved, then you're set to script and you write the script and submit it and you're done with it from that point on. And they change everything, which I'm not used to either. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I always wonder that because, you know, when you watch some of these series, made from books, a lot of times it's different. And what I find is different is that what they do to the character sometimes.
Yes, and that's true of Bones. The Temperance Brennan character is, I think of TV Tempe and book Tempe, and there are differences. She's younger. The setting is Washington, D.C., rather than the books, which are mainly in the Carolinas and in Quebec. In province in Canada. Yeah, she's also much more socially awkward in the show than the character Temperance Brennan is in my books. So there are some differences.
Do they have poutine in the Quebec?
Oh dear. Are you kidding me? It's Pope Catholic. Yes. I do not eat the stuff, but yeah, poutine is still very popular.
Well, yeah, we're both Canadian, so that's okay. Mm-hmm.
You go.
Well, it's certainly been wow, this is quite quite an interesting the whole thing, you know, everything. And we appreciate you for coming on. Now your newest book is called Cold Cold Bones, And we've had the great Kathy Rikes. Thank you.
Oh, well, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.